Welcome to Rooting For You, a seasonal gardening podcast for non-experts. I'm Tess, and I know nothing.
And I'm Elise, and I know some things.
Each week, we'll chat about one gardening topic, and then discuss the effort-reward payoff by asking, is the juice worth the squeeze? Just a heads up, there might be a bit of swearing in this episode. You've been warned. Welcome to today's episode, What's Been Keeping Elise Busy in the Garden This Winter? Now, before we get to the topic, I have been away. I have been sunning myself in the European, Italian sunshine for the last few weeks. And Elise and I have just got together and we've done chatting for hours, catching up on everything. And we were going to start talking about gardening. And we thought, let's record it. Because I think everyone else will be interested to know what's been keeping Elise busy in the garden while I've been away.
So what's been keeping Tess busy in the garden? Nothing.
Nothing.
Tess has been doing no gardening. But, yeah, we thought that there could be some good learnings in for everyone over what's been keeping me busy over the last 4 to 6 weeks of a very chilly winter.
Yep. Well, I've been having a warm time.
So how did you enjoy Italy?
Italy was so fabulous. And what I loved about it is there's just small garden patches everywhere. Like everyone has their own edible garden, growing their own stuff. And it looks like they've got a range of stuff in there. It's just so amazing.
And big or small, right? Like, you know, houses with big properties, they've got big veggie gardens and orchards. But then even in like the more suburban areas, there's allotments and there's little veggie patches jumping up everywhere. It's like no matter what your space availability is, like everyone grows something.
Just, it's prioritized, which is really cool.
I love that.
And because the produce is just also so much better than, you know.
Yeah, I wonder if it's like a frugality thing or a traditional thing, or whether it is because the Italians just prioritize high quality produce so much, and there's just no debate about it that if you want the highest quality produce, you have to grow it yourself. Yeah.
I think also the heat is a big factor. Like, the extension of their seasons compared to Melbourne, where our seasons are a lot shorter. Like, I was eating, one of the places I was staying in Sicily had a garden in like the little Airbnb that I was, and they had figs, like these massive, ginormous, plump, size of a child's fist figs that we were eating in June.
Which is early summer, which for me blows my mind, having a fig early summer, although there is a breed of figs. Here I'm going to go on a bit of a tangent, but there is a breed of fig that actually matures. It starts to grow the previous season but never fully matures, and then overwinters with like a baby fig on the tree, and then come early summer.
Oh, that's very cool.
Actually grows into a full fig. Yeah, it's called like a Breba variety or something. I'm sure I'm not pronouncing that right, like everything. But I wonder if this is just a case of they've got amazing, you know, summers that mean that you get figs in summer, or whether this is that particular variety.
Yeah.
But either way, the joys.
Yeah. When it's the right time, we should definitely do a fig.
We should do a fig episode.
We should do a fig episode.
And if you are interested in growing figs, hot tip is now's the time to plant them.
Oh, well, we should do a fig episode.
We should definitely do a fig episode. But, you know, even in Latvia, where my family's from, which is a lot colder than Australia, everyone has a veggie garden, but they're all these like makeshift greenhouse situations.
Ah.
They're all like plastic polytunnels.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the commitment to growing is there, but probably what they're growing and how they're doing it's a bit different to the Italians. The Italians are very, very, very lucky.
And it's just it's prolific everywhere, like on trains, and you just look off into the gardens as you're passing by. Everyone has tiny little gardens and they're just making do with whatever they can, and it's very cool.
This is my dream for Australia.
Yeah.
Starting with the Rooting For You podcast.
Do you know who also spent time in Italy gardening was
The Hungry Gardener?
The Hungry Gardener.
I was thinking of that.
We had him on the podcast last year, I think.
Yeah.
And he had done a stint in Lucca in Tuscany. So if anyone's interested in
reminiscing the beauties of Italian growing.
I'd recommend that.
That was a great episode.
Okay, so back to Melbourne, back to winter.
So while you've been sunning yourself in Italy, I have been slogging it out in the cold and wet Victorian winter. But you know me, nothing will stop me getting
nothing
out there.
Nothing will stop you.
Nothing will stop me. So I thought we could just go over some of the jobs that I did this weekend. So I had a very, very, very full day in the garden yesterday and this morning. So I've done heaps of winter tasks. So the type of winter tasks I'm doing are the types of winter tasks listeners can be doing too.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, I'm reminded that winter is your mum's favourite time to garden because you don't get as sweaty as when you're gardening in summer.
And do you know the other thing I thought today? It was like winter, I get really cold. Like I'm just like a cold person and I find the only way I can truly warm up is like do some hard task in the garden. Yeah. And all of a sudden I'm like ripping off my beanie, ripping off my jacket, like getting sweaty. And that kind of like warmth from inside I really, really love. I suppose it'd be the same if I exercise, but I don't. So I just garden.
Garden is your exercise.
Gardening is my exercise, yeah.
How is your... Last time I was in Macedon, it had like an outdoor fire set up like right next to your greenhouse, Chicken City situation. Is that still going strong?
It is still going strong. I do have the little fire pit there, which I love. But this was the fun update, which you don't even know about, Tess, is I've now got a fireplace inside the house. A real wood fireplace.
Ooh, how exciting.
I know. So despite being in the mountains and being freezing, we never had a wood fire, which has always blown my mind. But getting a fire put in retrospectively to a house that's already built is very difficult. Don't recommend it. So it was a bit of a process, but there was a really big storm a couple of years ago, I suppose on the whole of Victoria, but where I am, we really copped it and so many trees came down. And we've actually spent 2 years, I reckon, cleaning up the tree that had fallen.
Wow.
But you can imagine we've got all this wood. So then it was like the trees have fallen. We can't do anything about it now. And we've got access to all this wood. We really need a fireplace. So we got one put in. So this is the first winter I can light a fire inside and I am so happy about it.
Well, that just sounds like a delightful way to end a day in the garden.
It does. And yesterday, like I lit the fire before I went out for garden the whole day. I did come back, have a coffee in the afternoon and put some more wood on it. But then coming back and sitting by the fire was just so nice. And I think, I don't love winter for many reasons, but having the fireplace there has brought me so much more joy, way more than the fire pit outside ever did.
Okay.
But, you know, this actually links on to the first thing I wanted to talk about for today's episode because having a fireplace now means I have ash in the fireplace.
Okay.
So when you finish the fire, you got to clean out all the ash before you start the next fire. Now, anyone listening to this that has a fire, the ash is actually very beneficial for your garden.
Ooh.
So another way we can turn something that's, you know, arguably a waste product in our homes into something beneficial. So wood ash, now let me just say here, like if you're burning things that aren't meant to be burnt or, you know, you're burning treated pine or briquettes or anything kind of chemically, don't use that stuff on your garden. Yeah. But for the
most
part.
When you're like burning things that shouldn't be burned, I'm like, what are you talking about here?
Yeah, like you're a pyromaniac. No, but I mean, if you're burning like cardboard and newspaper and wood, you know, normal things to burn, that's great ash to be using in the garden.
Okay. And are you just putting this on the top layer or do you need to like dig it in?
Well, there's a few ways you can do it.
Okay.
So first I'll say about wood ash. The reason why it's good for the garden is it's high in calcium, magnesium and potassium. So they're three of the essential minerals for growing. But the thing you got to know about it is it's very alkaline. Mm-hmm. So we haven't got into a whole lot of detail about soil pH being acid or alkaline because it's not beginner gardening. And I personally don't really mess around with it too much.
Mm.
But the one thing I have said on the podcast and I do pay attention to is there are a few plants that really like high acid soils. These are blueberries for one.
Okay.
So because the ash is very alkaline, don't add.
You wouldn't put it on a blueberry.
You wouldn't put it on a blueberry.
Gotcha.
But interestingly, there are some flowering plants that really like the potassium from the fire ash. And interestingly, lawns like grass really likes ash. So you can literally just sprinkle it on your lawn. And that's going to do good things. The reason this is, I believe, is a lot of people use high nitrogen fertilizers on their lawns. Mm. If anyone's ever fertilized a lawn or given it any kind of like lawn booster, this is going to be high nitrogen. Mm-hmm. This can also be the same for a veggie patch. What that does is it decreases the pH of the soil. So mm-hmm. it makes it quite acid. So by adding the fire ash, we can bring up the pH and make it more neutral.
That's cool.
Yeah, it is. So for a home gardener, the way that I would do this, if you had a lawn, I'd sprinkle some on your lawn just like you would a granular fertilizer. Don't mm-hmm. do this on a windy day or you're going to end up losing it all. If you knew your soils were too acid or if that's a problem in your area, perhaps you do know that, then I would add it around trees. I'd add it in the veggie patch. I'd just add it everywhere, just mm-hmm. pouring it on the top.
Yeah, okay.
If either of those things aren't you, I would just add it to your compost.
Ah, okay.
Just chuck it in there and all will be well.
And what about if you have like an in-ground worm?
Oh, yeah.
Like do worms like ash or is it probably like not their thing?
I'd say it's not their thing. Okay, so just
in the regular compost.
Just in the regular compost. Now, like anything, if you put too much of something in the compost, it is going to throw it out. So we don't want to make our compost super alkaline.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you're putting coffee grounds in there, that's quite acid. So the fire ash makes it alkaline. So it all kind of balances as long. I can't imagine anyone's like loading up the fire ash to, you know, say you did some massive burn pile though. Like don't add the whole thing to your compost.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's going to be another great addition.
Love it.
Now, if you have chickens, chickens dust bath, we've talked about that. Mm-hmm. That's how they keep themselves clean. Wood ash mixed in with sand and dirt and other things they dust bath in is a brilliant addition for keeping them mite free.
Nice.
They love it. So a little bit in there goes a long way. So I'm very excited to have access to this new resource.
Yeah. I mean, we love turning waste into gold.
Yeah, exactly. So if you've got a fireplace, that's something else that, yeah, you can access in winter. Now, the other new thing I have at the moment, which you also don't know about, is a foster pony called Tony.
What?
I don't know how long.
Where did Tony the pony come from?
Tony the pony needed a home and you know
and now
how
you've
much
got space for.
Yeah, now I've got a couple of paddocks that are empty, so you know how much I can't say no. So we ended up with
Tony the pony.
Tony the pony. I don't know if he's a permanent fixture or not.
We're going to need to get a photo of Tony, yeah, Tony the pony.
He's pretty cute. He's pretty tiny.
How tiny is he?
Well, he'd be like, his head would be maybe up to my belly button.
Oh, my God.
But he's so solid. Like,
wow.
And he's got the biggest ass. He's like all rump.
There you go.
Like, he's obviously, you know, he's not meant to exist like this. Like, someone's obviously bred him that way for
right
some kind of
aesthetic.
Yeah, like nature didn't make Tony the pony. But he's really cute. So I'm just going to make sure he's happy before we take him on as a permanent fixture.
Gotcha.
But he's been there for a month. And the reason why he's interesting for the midwinter gardening is he's shitting everywhere.
Sure.
And for a little pony, he makes a lot of turds. Like I can't imagine how much a big horse shits. So yeah, I'm finding all these deposits everywhere. So now I'm picking them up because, you know, like love a fertilizer.
Yeah, absolutely.
So horse manure is something that I've never used on my garden because I've always had the chicken and the alpaca manure. So this will be a new one for me because horse manure is one that, you know, most people can access. You don't need a Tony the pony to access it. But, you know, you see the bags on the side of the road.
All the time.
Yeah. So horse manure is nowhere near as nutrient dense as chicken manure, mm-hmm. but it's more nutrient dense than cow and sheep.
Okay.
So it sits kind of in the middle there. So it is a really good one to use. But the warning I will give people, especially, well, I mean, if you're picking up your own horse shit, you already know this if you've got horses. But if you're picking it up from the side of the road, the problem with horse manure is they eat the grass and they eat a lot of weed seeds.
Oh.
And then the weed seeds don't get killed in their digestion.
Right.
And then they shit around
weed
the place
seeds in wherever
your,
you're
in your garden or wherever you're putting it. Now, from a seeds perspective, this is a great evolutionary aspect because the horse eats them, walks a long way.
Good for
does
the
a shit.
Good for the seeds.
Great for the seeds, but not so good for the home gardener. So if I picked up Tony the Pony's droppings, put them straight in my veggie patch, I can imagine they will be infestated.
Yeah, right.
With weeds. So what you need to do to overcome this is hot compost it.
Okay.
Now, I don't know exactly if this is like hot composting like we talked about in the episode where it's like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, whole thing done. But the point is we do need to get this compost up to a certain temperature to kill the seeds in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how much more work this is going to be for me.
Yeah.
But we'll find out. It's a learning experiment.
Yes.
For all involved. But you know how we talked about, I don't know what episode it was, but making cheap garden beds where you layer,
yeah.
you know, the manure and the autumn leaves and everything else. I wouldn't use his turds in that fresh because I think that would just completely fill it with weed seeds. So I think there's just got to be a bit of awareness about the horse poo. Anyway, I'm looking forward to having a new form of fertilizer and obviously having Tony as part of the family.
Yay for Tony.
Yay for Tony.
I don't want fresh turds to be ever said on this podcast ever again. That's hideous. Let me just quickly find prefer? This. Let me just quickly find, while you're talking, let me just quickly find this episode reference for everyone listening along.
Would you prefer me to be more PC and say horse manure?
It's just the fresh.
Well, actually, having said this, it's not even fresh turds. Like if I left his manure sitting for months to break down, it still wouldn't kill the weed seeds. Because there's two issues with manure on the garden. One of them is that it can be quite hot and can burn plants. This is one reason why people let it sit or compost before they put it in their veggie patch. That's not the issue I'm referring to here. So it's not a fresh turd issue.
Yeah.
It's just a turd issue.
Yeah. And the heat will
kill them.
And the heat's the only thing that will kill them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Shame.
Okay, so I just had a very quick look and the episode that we were referring to is Creating New Garden Beds, which was season 5, episode 11. We've got this here as autumn, but is this a year-round job, creating new garden beds? Like, can you apply this same theory?
Well, interesting you bring it up. We did it in autumn because autumn leaves feature heavily in that episode. But I spent this morning picking up a huge amount of autumn leaves that are still hanging about. So clearly into winter, this can still be done.
Yeah.
And okay. I really like that because spring's a good time to plant. Set them up in winter, they'll be ready to go for spring.
Fabulous.
And this does link into another topic for midwinter, which is still collecting your autumn leaves.
So fabulous. And you know how much I love this idea of repurposing autumn leaves. I feel like in winter, while I've been away, it's just gone from not winter to winter and I've just skipped the kind of beautiful autumn leaves season. But if you still have autumn leaves around, I mean, definitely get them and start using them. And
some of my trees haven't even finished dropping them. Oh, so I don't know if this is I don't know if this is just a particular season or whether it's always like this. I don't really pay attention. But anyway, there's still plenty piled up. So, I mean, listen to the episode because we have like 100 things to do with them. But things I've been doing with them is mulching. Mm-hmm. I love my autumn leaf mulch. Putting them straight in the compost, ringing them up around the base of trees. So we talked about mm-hmm. how deciduous trees actually need that food. So as much as I'll steal some, I also ring, like kind of push them in so they're quite tight around the base. Don't push them up to the trunk because you can make rot on the trunk. Give it a little neck,
okay.
little collar.
Yep.
And then obviously I give them to the chickens. So look, there's more than enough uses for them. And yeah, we don't need to rush to get it all done in autumn because we've got winter.
Okay, fabulous.
Another thing I was doing this weekend, and this was quite a big job for me anyway, it won't be for most people listening, was pruning my berry canes.
Ah, yes. We had a whole episode that was why you shouldn't prune your berries in autumn and why you should wait for winter.
Exactly. And in that episode, I talk about how the reason you should wait till winter is that your raspberries might not be finished fruiting. And I can say, it's the first week of July, so what's that, 5th or 6th week of winter, I still have raspberries that are ripening.
That's amazing.
I mean, it's very strange because this is an autumn fruiting raspberry that's still going in winter. But this is why if I'd cut it down early, I would have lost it. So definitely, definitely do not do this in advance. Wait.
So we're referencing a bunch of episodes that we've done before. I'll put the episode references in the show notes so everyone listening along can check those out rather than me rushing to check them now.
Yeah, good thinking. Good thinking. And I mean, now there's nearly 100 episodes to listen to. There's a few to scroll back through and find.
Indeed. Okay, so we've got the autumn leaves that we mentioned and also the pruning berries. Yep. So go back and check those out if that's something that's happening in your garden right now.
Yes. And on the pruning berries, what I've done this year is – remember in the pruning berries we talked about how there's the wavy arms going in each direction? What I've done is I've got all the arms that are still – I've pruned, got rid of all the dead ones. All the ones that have left I have taken all in the same direction. So they're all going left or right. And I've tied them up together. My thinking is that then when the new canes shoot up in spring, I can tie them all to the right.
Okay, so you're kind of like training them.
So I'm training them. So I've got the older ones on the left that are going to give me fruit this year, the new ones on the right that are going to give me fruit the following year. So then when I prune and I'm like ripping them all down, it's very easy because they're aged together. Okay. So look, I'll get back to you as far as if I keep this up and how it goes. But as of today, I'm quite chuffed with it. The other thing that I was very conscious of was, and remember we talked about my failed zucchinis this year?
Mm-hmm.
And the shade, well, the shade that I was worried about was from the blackberry vine or the blackberry cane.
Mm.
So I've taken all the wavy arms of the blackberry and I've tied it all up on the south of the veggie bed. So I don't think it's going to shade my veggie bed.
So do you keep them tied up?
Yeah.
The whole year round?
The whole year round, yep.
They're and they'll continue to grow up, to grow and flourish Okay.
Remember, and this is getting a bit technical, but remember with the berries, the first year they grow the wavy arm, the second year they grow fruit off the wavy arm. So these ones I've tied up, they're not
they've still got another year.
But it's just berries coming off. They're not going to get longer.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then the new ones coming up, they're going to be wild and free and out there. I'm going to take them and tie them when they're big enough.
Okay.
Just to keep it neat and tidy.
Okay. Did you take any photos of this while you were doing it?
No. And and my mum said the same thing. She's like, where's your before and after? I was like, it's such a shame. I regret that.
Oh, well, take photos of the finished product and then.
I will. Well, I'll take photos of how I've tied them up because I think it's quite a good job of freeing up the garden bed.
Yeah, nice.
Because I want those zucchinis back.
Okay. What else have you been doing?
I've been pruning my fruit trees.
Oh, yeah. Radio.
This is – we've talked about this before and we don't give you tips on how to do this because it really is specific to each type of fruit tree. But if you have a fruit tree that's poorly shaped for whatever reason, whether that's like it's too tall, it's shading something, it's going into your neighbor's garden, it's impinging your shed, I don't know. Winter's the time to go super hard on the pruning.
Yeah.
And that's like what we've talked about before is winter's the time to do all sorts of things with your trees. So I've gone very hard on my pruning to get them back to the shape I'm wanting because when I planted them, I didn't know that much about gardening and I knew nothing about pruning fruit trees. So I have let them get a bit out of control. And I think with a fruit tree, they're often a lot more productive when you've got good airflow and you've pruned them into a vase shape. These are all things you'll read about when you Google how to prune your apple tree or whatever it is. So that's kept me busy. And I will say once you know what you're doing, it's very overwhelming at the start, but once you know how to prune a fruit tree, it's very, very fast. It's like snip, 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 wham, bam, thank you, man.
Because it does feel quite overwhelming.
Yeah. The first time I did it, it took me hours because I was like, do I cut that? Do I cut that? What do I do here? And then now I'm so fast.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah. So it's definitely not always going to be an overwhelming task. The other thing with fruit trees are if you want to plant any, now's the time to do it.
Of course.
Of course. And we've got a whole episode on that.
We do.
Which is bare-rooted fruit trees. We'll also put that in the episode notes. I haven't planted any new ones this year. I've taken a consolidation approach.
Mm-hmm.
Elise needs to stop planting new things. But there is one that I'm considering moving. And if I do that, I will move it. When I say this is a dwarf fruit tree, like I'm not moving a massive.
Yeah, right.
If you want to move anything, winter's the time to do it as well because it's all dormant.
That is a lot. Oh, one last thing. What about your penguins?
Oh, my penguins. I haven't done my penguins yet. That is on the list of things to do. For anyone that's listened to our recent episode, you'll know exactly what we're talking about.
If you haven't, you have no idea.
Then you should go back and listen and we won't give it away.
Okay, so just a little recap of everything that we've spoken about.
Mm-hmm.
We spoke about the additional uses for fire ash.
Yep.
Creating new garden beds.
Yep.
Using horse manure. Not suggesting everyone go out and get their own Tony the Pony.
No.
Autumn leaves, pruning berries, planting fruit trees and bare-rooted fruit trees, and then also splitting dahlias.
Splitting dahlias, yeah. And look, I think winter's often seen as a time where there's nothing to do in the garden, and sure, there's not very much to do, but as we can see from that list, there are a few things to keep ticking along with that will mean come spring, you'll be in good stead.
Mm. Absolutely. I think that setting yourself up for spring, so you're coming into spring and you've got all of your jobs, your big sort of kind of like garden maintenance-y type jobs out of the way, then yeah.
And I like a lot of these jobs because they are once a year thing. Like the satisfaction of pruning your berries and pruning your fruit trees and know you don't have to do it again for 12 months is very satisfying. I'm like weeding where I'm like, I'm going to have to do it again next week.
Rooting For You is hosted by Elise and Tess, artwork by Lauren Janine. You can find us on Instagram at rootingforyoupod or email rootingforyou@elisealexandra.com. And remember, we are rooting for you.